Well, here we are. This is Life in the Peloton, presented by the Cycling Podcast. Another episode this week and a very special episode coming up. Lionel, welcome to the episode again. Great to chat to you again. How are you doing over there?
We're doing good. Yeah, we're in the middle of our Giro over on the Cycling Podcast. Anyone who hasn't caught up with what we're doing, we're basically telling stories from the recent and not so recent past of the Giro d'Italia, which would have been on at the moment, wouldn't it? And well, as we're doing our Giro, Mitch, this episode is about your first Giro d'Italia in 2014. How has it come about, and what's in store?
Well, this is pretty special, this one, and I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did producing this episode, because Lionel, you and I were talking about this when we were sort of coming up with the idea about the Giro, and you said, look, I'm going to run some stuff about the Giro. Have you got anything about the Giro? And I thought about my first Giro d'Italia, and I won. I was in the team that won the team's time trial in Belfast, and I thought, that is something that has stuck in my memory for my whole career. I didn't know at the time how special that victory was going to be, but it's one of the best moments of my career. And I thought, it's something I talk about with all my teammates, my ex-teammates. Whenever I see them, we talk about this win, this moment, this Giro. And I thought, wow, if I could get these guys back together on one podcast, how good would that be? How good would that be to talk about the day before, the day of, and a little bit about the days after? And we went for it. We went out there, well, I went out there, and I spoke to 8 of the 9 guys. Unfortunately, I couldn't speak to Ivan Santaramita, but I spoke to the 8 of the 9, and I had a blast chatting to all my mates about these episodes that happened. And pretty much what we've done is those 3 days, we've compacted in. We've got sort of 5 or 6 questions around that, plus the director of the race, our sports director, Matt White, as well, put his feedback in there as well. It's just a brilliant episode, and I really enjoyed it. It was probably about 8 or 9 hours of recording, and we really compacted it down. So I had a great chat with all my old teammates. I really hope you guys enjoy this one, because it's a really special one for me. Here we go. The Giro Team Time Trial 2014. Sit back and listen to this one, guys.
I think everyone says you come home with the most stories of any race in the calendar.
Hi, my name is Cameron Meyer.
I'm a professional road cyclist with Michelin Scott. In 2014, I went to my 6th Grand Tour with Orica GreenEdge at the Giro d'Italia.
There's a real cycling feeling, like the real people that love cycling down to its core, I think lives in the Giro. I think that pink jersey, the epicness of the Dolomites, the mountains, the history of it, the passion of the people, the food. I just think there's something about the Giro that is cycling right down to its core.
For me, it's the passion of the fans. Hi, I'm Michael Matthews, professional cyclist with Team Sunweb. I did the Giro in 2014 with Orica GreenEdge, and it was my 2nd Grand Tour. It's a different feel. I think also when I thought about cycling as a kid, I thought of Italy, the country. For me, France is obviously massive with the Tour de France and everything, but for me, the Tour de France is a different feel. You really go there, the people are so passionate, and it's a different feel, but yeah, the people are just amazing. The country is so beautiful.
Just from the experience I had at that first year in 2014, made me really fall in love with it.
Hi guys, it's Michael Hepburn here from Mitchelton Scott. The 2014 Giro was my first Grand Tour, and that was during my 3rd year pro.
I remember racing in Italy as an amateur in the under 23s, and you know some of those one-day races, they're not the most enjoyable races, but I've got to say, once I turned professional and started doing more stage racing in Italy, I really fell in love with it. I think the people that are around the race, the culture is like no other, and not many other countries in cycling can match that. Okay, you have the Belgians for the classics, but with the Grand Tour racing, the Italians just, they really get behind it, and it's that real family feel to it, that race.
I think a lot of people say this, but I feel the fans are the best in the world.
Hi, I'm Luke Durbridge. I currently ride for Mitchelton Scott. Back in 2014, I was third year professional, and that was my second ever Grand Tour.
Last year was the first year I did the Giro in a long time. I think I did it in 2015, and I didn't do it again until 2019. And I'd forgotten how the Giro went. And just an example is we were waiting for the team presentation, and me, Jack Bauer, and Brent Bootwater thought we'd go get a coffee. And it was just before the presentation. We walked into a bar, and they were closing, you know. And he walked in, and he's like, you know, you here for the Giro? I said, yeah, waiting for the presentation. Oh, come in, come in, come in. You know, he opened up, made us a couple of decafs, gave us crostata, and at the end of the day, I went to go pay, and he's like, no, 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 of course, for the Giro, anything. And gave us free coffee and cake, and we went back down, and I was just like, yeah, I forgot. Like, they just really love it.
It's the passion of the Italians. It's incredible. I raced in Giro, didn't finish at all. G'day, I'm Brett Lancaster, currently sports director with Team Ineos in my fifth year of DSing. I rode the Giro 9 times. 2014 was my 8th Giro. It's ups and downs, the weather, it could go pear-shaped at any time. You know, it's unknowns. The Italians do call it the most beautiful race in the world. It's a lot different with the Tour. The Tour is a lot more stressful. But the Giro, you know, you don't know what's coming the next day, and that's the most beautiful thing of it.
It's a sort of unpredictable race. A lot of things can happen. Hi there, I'm Peter Weening. I'm already a long-time professional. I don't know how many years, but a couple of years Rabobank, 4 years Greenheads, and the last 4 years with Team Roompot. Yeah, 2014 Giro was a special edition for me. Good group of guys, a lot of fun, nice victories. You got a mix of guys over there, guys that come from the classic with classics with good form, and some other guys who go for GC, and it's a bit different than the Tour, because the Tour everybody is 100% prepared for that, and in the Giro you have also quite a few guys that come from the spring classics and just try to do something good with their shape they're still having.
Oh man. On the calendar of races throughout the year, it has to be the craziest race of any of them.
My name is Swain Tuft. I rode for Orca Green Edge, and this 2014 Giro goes down as probably one of the most memorable Grand Tours I've ever experienced. Hope you enjoy the stories.
It stands out for me as the one race that, like, all the people complain about weather protocols and all that kind of stuff just doesn't apply. And the racing is just mental. It's the one race where I feel like there's just no control. And it's just kind of mayhem all the time. It's, like I said, that year, as you know, we went over those two mountains where everyone knew it was snowing. You could see it was snowing when the valley we were standing in, the organizer was still convincing us that somehow it was going to be okay, and that, you know, it wasn't snowing at all up there. So, you know, it's that kind of mayhem and that kind of uncontrolled beauty that I like.
The Italian culture stands out. For me, I started my sort of professional career in Italy, so that was the first Grand Tour I ever did. And I've got a really soft place in my heart for that one.
Hi, my name's Matt White. I had a 10-year career as a professional road cyclist, and now I'm in my 13th year as a sports director. Back in 2014, I took the Orica Green Edge boys to my 14th Grand Tour, the 2014 Giro d'Italia.
I know you've probably got a million Giros mixed up in your head, but I think we've sort of caught up to what this year was, and try and get to that day before. Now, I've alluded to the boys a little bit about what we were feeling, and now I want to get into sort of like what your head was like, because it could be all bullshit. And I was like, oh, Whitey was talking like we'd already won this thing. And what was the feeling for you the day before the race? We're in that hotel there. It was wet. And for me, I was feeling, and I know a couple other boys are feeling like, yeah, I know we're favorites here, but like I'm starting to feel a bit nervous here. You know, we're doing these efforts with Quaddy. And what was the feeling for you on the outside coming into this and the expectations you had on us and even the team having on you?
Yeah, look, I remember being up in Dublin. It was a pretty, pretty normal day for that part of the world, but it was a pretty grim day, and we had to go out there and do some quality efforts. And I remember it was a nightmare trying to find a good piece of road. We looked on the maps and we went for a couple of drives, myself and Quaddy, to try to find a safe road, a straight road. We eventually found a road. It was as good as we could find. And always those days are a little bit stressful just because you know that in a team's time trial, shit can go wrong pretty quick. You are on general roads. You know, I don't even think we had a car in front. I'm pretty sure it was just me and Quaddy behind.
Yeah.
There was Irish roads. There's no lip on the road. So it was basically you guys were doing the efforts. We were behind you. We found that piece of road. And there was quite a big variety of talents in that roster. And I suppose just that day before to get those efforts done. And I think it's sometimes good also to put a bit of fear in guys because actually sometimes those efforts the day before are actually harder than the race. I was confident of the ability of the group we had that if we rode as planned, that we would win. And yeah, I was excited. I get pretty excited about races in general. And we had won the Tour de France the year before. We'd had three or four team time trial wins by 2014 already. I remember the big stress was looking at the weather for the next day and how, Dublin, the weather changes 10 times in a day. And I was just kept looking at that weather going, well, it could be anything tomorrow. So that was that tension didn't totally die off after we finished those efforts the day before.
I probably didn't feel as much of what Whitey was saying and that pressure that you're sort of talking about because the year before I'd gone to the Tour de France and that's where we won the team's time trial when we had the yellow jersey with Impey and Simon Gerrans. I probably remember my own nerves just about the team's time trial just because I know that we can win. We had a squad that could win that day on the first stage and the day before was just those pre-nerves that you normally get on the big occasion. I remember a bit of discussions about what efforts we're going to do and it was raining because we're in Ireland and every day was nearly raining in Ireland since we got there. And yeah, probably just my own nerves about the race and that we could win it and possibly take that pink jersey.
I think the day before it was a strange vibe. Like Whitey was uber confident that we already had that pink jersey on our shoulders. And it was basically a decision of who's going to wear it sort of conversations. And we're also looking at each other like, who is going to wear it? You know? And then, yeah, we went out and started doing those TTT efforts out on the road. And yeah, I remember Durbo and Sueno just, yeah, tearing us a new one on those roads that you feel like you're in a too big of a gear and you need to constantly keep changing back all the time. But if I remember correctly, it wasn't raining that day. So that was a bonus. But I think it was raining the day before or something. We did a ride outside, which was quite sketchy. But we were all quietly very confident, but in the end, in a triple T, everything has to come together. If one guy has a bad day, the whole team is done. The way Whitey did it, it could have really messed us up, but I think in the end, it gave us massive confidence to go in it thinking we're already winners. And I think that's his way of boosting people's motivation to get the best out of them is to already plan ahead of what we're going to do once we've won.
I certainly thought we were in with a shot. We had a great team there. But also, it's the Giro d'Italia. It's one of the biggest races on the calendar. And to go there and be the best team on the day is another thing altogether. But, yeah, as you said, Whitey was very confident. And I think us as riders as well were quite confident. But to do it on the day is another thing. So I guess it's one of the reasons why it just makes it so special, that whole experience.
For me, you never want to do a team's time trial ever in the wet. And I think I still not fear that, but I still really don't enjoy that. I mean, I can sort of trust myself to go well in a time trial in the wet, but just with everyone else around you, you're so close to the wheel, you're going 60 k's an hour, so it's like one of those things that you really don't want to do. So I remember the days before we rolled in, and typical Ireland style, it's sort of a bit rainy, and we're staying in this beautiful hotel out in the countryside, and everything's green, but the reason everything's green because it rains all the bloody time there. And we go out for the day before effort. And the day before effort is generally horrible. No one feels great. No one's warmed up properly. No one's nutritioned properly. We've probably just got to the hotel the day before. Everyone's been team presentation lag and you feel just a bit like, you know. For me, I always like to go really hard the day before just to sort of like settle my own nerves. So I'm planning in my head that, you know, this session, I'm just going to go for it. And not to hurt anyone else, it's just purely for me to just go as hard as I can to blow out all those cobwebs and settle those nerves for tomorrow. But doesn't necessarily
bring a lot of unity in the team if one guy wants to have a really easy day for the day before. So then there's this sort of, you know, disparity between someone wants to go hard, someone doesn't want to go hard, this person wants to go in between, this guy's nervous about, you know, if you're nervous about tomorrow, you just want to show like a good turn. So then everyone's sort of like, I'm not sure. And then we're on open traffic. There's cars flying by. You got to find a nice, straight, quiet road in Belfast, which is nearly impossible. And Whitey and Quaddy are giving us the lay of the land of what they want. You know, they want us to do 5K or I'm not sure what it was. But
above race pace.
Above race pace, just to sort of... And like, I don't have a hell of a lot of memory of what happened, but I know we had some firm discussions afterwards and Swaino had a bit of a chat with me afterwards about being a bit silly and going too hard. But I wasn't trying to do a pissing contest. I was just, you know, trying to blow out my cobwebs. Leading into that Giro, we'd worked together a little bit, that group, a few of us, but we were all real young. I guess we didn't really, for me, I didn't really buy into the pressure because it was just sort of like, yeah, just go out and do it and, you know, go rip it.
It's like some guys like to go a little bit easier. Some guys like to really open up and like the Durbo might be on a day where he goes, I'm really going to open the pins today. And I always find that the meeting afterwards is trying to bring everyone back together and just like the guys that got freaked out because some guys are going so strong. You're trying to say, oh, it's just the day before, you know, it doesn't count. Like tomorrow we're going to all be on song. You're going to have the proper warm up and you're just trying to bring everyone back to that same spot.
Whitey was confident. Whitey's always full of confidence, but he went with some strong boys there and guys that knew what they were doing, you know, like some Swain and Heppy. He looked at Peter Weaning, like, what a strong freak that guy is in a good way. Like, super nice guy, and he, you know, as you know, Mitch, he could pull a good old turn in the team time trial. So real solid riders there. And I guess people were bouncing off Whitey's confidence a bit, but at the same time, you think, oof, you don't want to go in overconfident. And there was a lot of unknowns in that course, rain and wet.
Yeah. Some guys are actually really, really strong in training, eh? Some other guys can do like this extra 10% in the race, but some guys are also there, you know, like they totally can give them for the fully 150% they have in the training. And yeah, for me it's the same, you know, like it's a bit different. So over there, yeah, I was suffering in that training actually more than in the race, because yeah, you have in the race you have this sort of race stress, and yeah, training is something different, you know, like. And also in the wet, I didn't have a motivation for that training actually, but yeah, it was good to get some good tension on the muscles, and let's say it worked out well for us, eh?
We'd all seen the circuit. It was a city circuit. There was a lot of potholes that took a couple of teams out. And the difference with having a wet team's time trial and a dry team's time trial could have meant the difference between winning or losing that race. We could have been the strongest team, but if we had a totally wet team's time trial going against teams in the total dry, it wouldn't have been enough. So I remember being pretty stressed with the weather and looking at the radar, looking out to sea and seeing the weather changing so many times. And then my role once the race starts is, we had spoken individually what the role was. And I remember your role was to put in 100% till we got to the castle. I remember Santa Marita, because he was our supposed GC rider, that he was going to sit on until the climb on the way back. The big guys, obviously, their role is to go out hard, give you guys a lot of recovery so you can get that job done. Wing Dog as well, his role was a back-end role. So everyone had their individual role. And there was a lot of guys there that I'd worked with a lot in team time trials, Cam, Epi, Durbo, Svein. So I was really confident in that group. The main thing is we weren't really riding off, from memory, we weren't riding too much off time checks because from memory, Quickstep were definitely behind us, and I think BMC and whoever was second and third, they're all behind us. So I think we were going to go out there, whatever we were going to do, we're going to be the fastest through these time checks. So it was going to be pretty irrelevant time checks. But I do remember there were some key things that I had to point out to you guys with manhole covers and coming into corners. And what I like to do in those team time trials, you sort of think of yourself as the 10th man. So if you can give any information, if a guy's struggling, pull in here, get off the front, whatever that may be, any relevant information as well.
The course for the first stage was obviously right up the middle of town, so we weren't going to be able to see that until race day. But I do remember those sort of dead Irish roads that we were training on near the hotel. Team's time trial pre-race sessions, they normally end up the same. Some guys are in tears. Some guys are full of confidence. There's a few question marks going around. But, yeah, I think especially at a big event like that. It's the same with World Championships, Triple T's and everything. You really want to try and nail that last session. You know, you want to show your teammates what you've got. You also want to prove to yourself that you're ready. So, you know, they normally end up quite intense and then it levels off once you get to race day.
Hello, everybody. A very warm welcome. La Corsa Rosa, the 97th Giro d'Italia, the purest Grand Tour, and a race that is always as beautiful as it is challenging. Hello, and a very, very warm welcome. Already at the start of the race, Belfast Titanic. This year we start in Ireland. No rain at the minute, and it is time for Orica Green Edge. Some would say, looking at their lineup, that they've based their Giro d'Italia around getting the pink jersey and winning this stage. They came second last year at the World Trade Team Champions, Time Trial Championships, pardon me, but with men like Svein Tuft, who is 37, by the way. Happy birthday to him. You've got Cameron Meyer, Michael Matthews, Lancaster, Durbridge. This is a strong, strong team time trial outfit.
So my role was one of the stronger guys in the team, and that was... because I'm time trialist and team's time trial has been one of my fortes in my career. So for me, it was about pulling long turns. Swain Tuff was our strongest rider by far on that team. But for me, it was more about supporting Swain. Whitey always established in us, you pull as long and as hard as you can without dropping the speed. I think it was about, we were planning on about a minute pulls for me. And so I just go to the front, go as hard as I can for a minute and get off, and then a minute and then get off. And then I just found that, okay, I think it worked out. It was probably going to be 8 turns, maybe 9 turns of a minute, max effort. But then I know, because we had such a strong team and we had such a good bond with everyone, that I always go out there with the mentality, if I go as hard as I can and I get dropped, that's okay, because there's going to be enough guys to get us to the line. You never think, okay, I got to go from here to the finish. You go as hard as you can, and if you get to the finish, that's great. But if you don't, it doesn't matter, because you've got 8 strong guys with you that will get someone, you know, we will have 5 guys to the line for sure, because we've got a strong enough team.
I'm probably always Mr. Control or consistent. Whitey always goes, we know Cam, he'll deliver his turns, he'll be smooth, he'll get to the finish, he won't get dropped, which mounts a little bit of pressure on my shoulders, I always feel at those times. But I'm not one of the big drivers. I don't have the huge, big power watts that some of the big engines do and the big boys like Lancaster and Heppy and Durbo possess in the team's time trial. But I can hold my own in the turns and be smooth and bring some of my track craft into a team's time trial. So, yeah, just trying to be that smooth, consistent guy that's going to get to the line.
I think behind Swaino and Durbo, I was probably, I guess, the third strongest guy. I couldn't quite do the turns that those guys were doing, but I wasn't too far behind. So I just needed to make sure that I could hold their pace for as long as I can, I guess, like the rest of us. Just try and hold the wheel and not get dropped. I think that was a big part of my role, was to stay with the team and get to the finish. Because normally I can finish quite strong, so I can try and do some big turns towards the end if I save a little bit from the start. Oh, there was a climb in there too, which someone ripped it up there, and I was grinding my teeth going up there. But yeah, I think from the way Whitey was talking the day before, it wasn't even an option to get dropped. It was, yeah, there was only one thing we had to do that day, and was win.
This is Heppy.
The course for the first stage was obviously right up the middle of town, so we weren't going to be able to see that until race day. But I do remember those sort of dead Irish roads that we were training on near the hotel. Team's time trial pre-race sessions, they normally end up the same. Some guys are in tears. Some guys are full of confidence. There's a few question marks going around. But, yeah, I think especially at a big event like that, it's the same with World Championships, Triple T's and everything. You really want to try and nail that last session. You know, you want to show your teammates what you've got. You also want to prove to yourself that you're ready. So, you know, they normally end up quite intense and then it levels off once you get to race day.
This is Brett Lancaster.
I vaguely remember the part coming up the Parliament House there. That was an absolutely beautiful setting. But once again, that's where Peter Weening hit the front and put us all at a bit into the red. Luckily, it was a technical descent, a bit of time to recover after that. Yeah, it was basically keep it all together and, you know, finish across the line with the minimum riders, as we did a lot in that team and we're very successful at it.
just go as fast as you can and just just kill yourself in that team time trial. But
this is the wean dog.
Yeah, the thing is, we had a sort of mixed group of riders. I think for the big guys, you know, like the let's say the guys that come from the track. Yeah, they are the guys that that could give the team on the flat some speed. For a rider like me, it's you have to watch out if you go up a climb that you don't kill the team. You know, like if it was my turn and you go on a climb, then it's if I do my pace on that climb, what actually what I did as well. So yeah, you have to be careful that you don't kill the other guys on the climb, because yeah, they give them for the fully 100% on the flat already, and they are a little bit heavier. So yeah, you can make them suffer on that climb, and that's not a plan. You have to stick together as a team, and I think everybody did his role perfect.
I think the castle does stick out as well, because I just remember you guys had nailed that first, I think it might have been 7 to 10K to the castle, and you guys had gone out there at close to 60 kilometre an hour, Santa sitting on, Windog doing a one short turn, and you were coming through to do some, a couple of big ball biters. And when we got to the castle, turn left, I just remember you guys had nailed that first bit, you guys had lined across the road, the wind was taking you from right to left, and this crowd was incredible. Like, I think none of us expected such a big reception in Northern Ireland. I think now Northern Ireland hasn't got a cycling history. Ireland maybe a lot more with Roach and Kelly, but the crowds were incredible. And I just remember going over the castle and knowing that, oh, we're on a good one here. But even in the car, the descents, sometimes I have to look away, because like I remember the descent off that castle, and it was a 90-degree right-hander through. You come out of the park, and there was a 90-degree right-hander onto the straight road, and there was a manhole cover through the, on the outside of the corner, and then there was a series of manhole covers on the left, the ones that caught Garmin and Dan Martin. And I remember once we got through those and settled, and you guys, we called you into the middle of the road there, I was like, whoa, we are on a good one here.
This is Swaino.
My history in team time trials was just the fact that I never really had like a super turbo like Derbs and Heppy and these guys who had big power. I was just consistent throughout the day. Like my power at the beginning was similar to what I could do at the end. It's not a lot to think about. You just have to like, I always find it's like you have to handle the first 5K, get through that, and then you can settle into something that you can maintain. But that's usually been my role for all of the team time trials. And it just happened to be one of those days you rarely get while racing. You usually get them out training. And I felt fantastic this day. But, you know, with the wet roads and just the nature of the course, it was still quite stressful, you know. I remember, like, you know, the team time trial was kind of my thing. And it was something like I really loved, and it was something I really believed in. It was kind of part of my role on that team to kind of help kind of guide everyone, because I was part of it. It's one thing if you're a director, you're standing from the outside and you can see what's going on from the car, but when you're in it, you can feel those things, you know. So I felt like my role was to really make it clear to some of our riders who, you know, some of them are just massive talents, they can't help it. And I remember going to Weendog and saying, man, look, if you find yourself on the front before this climb, you have to remember all of us have like 20 kilos on you. You have to step off and get to the back, you know. Mate, sure enough, Weendog was on the front riding 700 watts. I remember everyone was just cursing and screaming under their helmets, and but no one could actually do anything. And then Derbs did the one of the most mature things I've ever seen him do, is take over the front and ride a controlled pace over that climb, and that saved our race. If he wasn't there in that part of the lineup to actually take control, it's at that point it's the only way you can settle down a team. You can't yell in a radio, you can't, there's nothing you can relay to a team at that point that's on the verge of detonation. Only thing you can do is what Derbs did, and I always, you know, I'll remember that part for the rest of my life. But there's a lot of things within that day that were really special, but I think that one stands out is because that was the point where we were either going to make it or break it.
This is Derbo.
For sure, the climb sticks out for me. My memory of that race was the first rise that we went towards the climb, and Swaino did this mammoth pull, and we sort of come out, we'd sort of settled in, we're all good. I'm like, sweet, yep, we're feeling good. And then it was just like, oh, I just like really bit your legs. And it was just this slight uphill drag. And it was like heading towards the climb before you did a lap around the climb. Then you came back down the fast drag. And we went in and I'd done this real big pull. And no, Swaino did this really big pull when I was on Swaino's wheel. And I was like, oh, I'm really hurting in second wheel. And then Swaino's one off. And then I've done a really big pull. And I'm like, oh. And then we go again. And we get to the climb. And Swaino's pulled into it. And I'm pretty sure he went left. And I've taken over real keen as a bean to get to the top of the climb. Like, sweet, perfect. And I've heard Swaino yell, ease, because we wanted to get everyone over the climb together. Because then as a unit collectively, we would be a lot faster coming home. So we didn't want to drop anyone on the climb. So Swaino's like, tactically astute when it comes to teenage time trial, he goes, ease a little bit, because I'd gone, you know, bull out of a gate, 700 watts, let's go to the top of the climb, which everyone would. So I've just gone, okay, sweet, I'll ease here. So I've sat down and eased, and Wean Dog's thinking this is the time that Luke's slowing down. So he's gone, oh, well, I better take over now. But I was sort of just keeping the group together up the climb, riding like a steady pace. And Wean Dog's just stepped out like it's the Cowberg and Amstel Gold, out of his saddle. You know, he's not the most attractive bike rider out of the saddle, but out of a saddle with a TT bike and an aero helmet, bike side to side, and he's just taken off. I've seen him come past me like 2K, 3K an hour faster on the climb.
Look, I'm not done yet.
And I'm like, oh, I'm not finished my turn yet. Like, what's he doing? And he's just gone, what? Because he's such a strong bastard. And he's gone for it. And I'm like, oh, no. And then I've looked back, and then you've looked at me, and I remember that look. You just looked at me like, in. He just called, you've got the gaff. And then you're just like, so I've just gone from first wheel straight back into second wheel, and Wean Dog's even gapped me. And I'm like, weaning, ease. I'm just on my limit because I've done the pull and then you. And then everyone in the group's just like squeezing. Wean Dog's still like, okay, when can I go now? When can I go now? Just looking around, licking his lips.
The hill is definitely in my mind. That weaning, when he stepped out of the seat and then all of a sudden I started hearing at the back of the line, ease, ease. And the whole way up the hill, you just keep hearing ease because we've got to somehow get 6-7 guys over this hill, and weaning is dancing away from us like it's the Cowberg at Amstel Gold finish. And, yeah, I just remember the yelling up that climb for us to stay together. And then I remember when yourself and a couple of others had done their peels, and I'm going, and it's just started to sprinkle with rain, and I'm coming in to my last turn, and I'm going, ooh, right, I'm right on the edge here on my last turn, but I know I have to get back on because I have to finish with the five that we need to cross the line. It just started to rain just to make it that little bit more sketchy, a little bit harder to get on the wheel, a little bit harder to accelerate out of the corner. And I remember Heppy coming through for this turn after me, and I had to get on the back, and I was praying to God I could get back on, and luckily I did.
I think I was looking around if everybody could hold the wheel. If you go up that climb and stop halfway and drink a cup of tea or something, yeah, okay, yeah, if you want to do a racing like that, okay, that's also nice, but then you never win races, huh? So, so yeah, no, it was all necessary. I remember I was doing the pace, and I looked over my shoulder and everybody was still there. And also after that climb, I also did like all these corners in this descent and this first part on the flat as well. So to give everybody a sort of a rest. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, like, you can kill people on a climb, but then you're talking over a climb. And this was just a hill of 400 or 500 meters. So if you go too slow over that one and you lose 12 seconds or 10 seconds, you're never going to get it back in a team time trial of 6, 7 or 8K. You have to go everywhere on that parcours. You needed to go like for the fully 100% with the whole team. So if you say like, oh yeah, we go a little bit slower up there. Okay, that's nice. But where do you get a seconds back?
I feel like Swaino was building towards this last pull throughout the race. He was doing mammoth turns, minute pulls, minute and a half. I've done a lot of team time trials and two up time trials with Swaino. And he starts to get this bit of a rock on, bums to go side to side, and he tucks his head down like a little bulldog. So when we did the lot, when they come at the top of the climb, Santramita pulled up a little bit up the climb towards not the other climb we're talking about, but just this one little rise before we went to the finish. I can see Swaino just licking his lips like, you know, this is the moment. First bit was slight downhill fast, and then it was just like couple of corners and flat to the finish. And Sueno's just started opening up and you can start getting me rock on, getting the rock on. And you're sort of thinking, yeah, it's okay. You know, you're in the wheel, you're tucked away. Like, yeah, who's on the front? Oh, I must be, you know, going pretty quick here at 60 Ks an hour or whatever. But, and then eventually it just doesn't stop. And you're thinking like, oh, okay, like, whoa, it's going and it's going and it's going and it's going and it just kept going. And I'm thinking, Sueno's meant to finish first, but he's on the front now. Like,
he's going
to
blow.
We're going to lose this because Sueno's on the front now and he's got a K to go. Like, we're going to slow down. And then just didn't, just kept going. And I was just like, this guy's insane. You know, I think I was third wheel behind Matthews. And Matthews is fast, obviously, you know. And we're all just trying to, like, step out and finish side on. You know, so I'm thinking like, oh, yeah, like, we probably should be going quicker here. I'll probably go up next to him and we'll finish together and pop my head out. And then I'm like, all right, here we go. Got a big sprint up next to Sueno. And I just stayed exactly where I was. I should have just stayed in the wheel. Unless I just pushed an extra 100 watts for the exact same thing. So I just stood out and we all just like moved out of the line. Let's just like get a bit of wind in our face and stayed the exact same distance. It was like Sueno, Matthews, me, Cam, whatever, Ween Dog. And we all just went like, oh, yeah, well, we're not finishing side by side. Could it? He didn't even get out of his saddle.
This is Michael Matthews.
That final turn of Sueno, that I think he did literally one and a bit K pull for his last turn. It was unbelievable how much power he had at the end of a triple T where we were all on our hands and knees coming into the finish, and he just kept pulling. It was honestly like he had an engine in his bike. I don't often get dropped in any sort of discipline of cycling, but this was pretty incredible. On the flat, I would love to look back at my power of what I was doing on the wheel and see what he was doing, because that's something that really in my head is just, wow, it's incredible. And that's one thing that really thought in the race, like, this guy deserves this. If we do win, he deserves this pink jersey because he is the strongest here. And I'm just talking about the race. I'm not talking about what he did in the past. But just in this race, he was next level. He was above us all. Mm. He was standout. I don't think I've seen anything like that ever again since that day from anyone, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was one of these rare moments where you actually, everything comes together on the race day. I'll never forget that pull for the rest of my life, because if I tried to replicate that now, there's no way, but it was just one of those special moments you rarely get in sport. It's like, I will remember that to the day I die as like a time where everything synced together. Yeah, it would be hard to try and recreate, let's just put it that way. But I remember that final turn, because normally my mind would have been like, okay, off the front. The way that I felt was like, no, I can take this to the end, and there's no one who will ride faster than me. And that was my mindset. And like, looking back now, like, I think I still have the file, and I rarely look at that stuff. I really only looked at these things during team time trials, but it was like something 620 watts for like a minute and a half, you know? And like, for me, I know that I hate to say numbers and all that stuff, but that's a proud moment of my life, where it's just one of those rare times where everything comes together and you can really do something. The stars just align and you actually put it together at the right time in the right place. And that was just that moment for me, I guess.
So we had fastest time, but like we said before, I think all the fastest teams, all the favourites were behind us. So it is a bit of an agonising wait. We had a little bit of wet roads, but all the teams behind us, the weather was the same. So we knew you guys had done such a great ride. I was very confident that no one was going to beat us. But I suppose once we started and we got the first time check for Quickstep, and they were already 7 seconds down on the first time check, and knowing how much you guys had railed that team time trial from start to finish, it might not seem much, 7 seconds or 5 seconds, whatever it was, but I know with the likes of the guys we had, where do you make, you know, you can only go so fast. Mm. And you, once we had that first time check, we were up. I was very confident, but it is a nerve-wracking weight, And I remember it was cold. We all had big, heavy jackets on. We're waiting in that. Yeah, it wouldn't have been 10 degrees, I don't think. And we're in that little tent in the waiting area behind the stage, and just watching Quickstep come through and seeing it cross over our time and us taking the victory and just looking around the room. And there was, yeah, I remember looking around the room and there was guys quite nervous. There was, you know, guys very tense. Now it's some, and you know, Cam's very conservative. And Bling was staring at the television. Santa Marita was probably hiding under a chair. And then once we crossed over that line, it just the Swannies were there. I was there. Everyone was hugging, and yeah, it was just such a special moment before we went up on stage. And you guys went crazy on the podium with the champagne as well.
In my career, especially the last 4 years with Orica, a lot of those moments waiting, you know, for the last team to finish or watch some of the favourites come in. I think it was Quickstep, pretty tight. Like a lot of these, they're just always tight. And when they come in just behind us, we knew we had it. And it was, it's an amazing feeling to share it with we were good mates, you know. There wasn't any of us that weren't, you know, good friends in that team. So that was a pretty bloody special moment.
Like everybody is spraying each other with champagne. And it was really nice. But that's also, you know, like now I remember it again. There was actually some tension on the team as well because, yeah, that was our day. And, we were going all flat out for the team time trial and there was no tomorrow. It's only today. Let's try to win this and then we will see tomorrow. And, if you win that day and then, you know, like the tension is off, everybody's happy, you know, every sort of relief. So, yeah. I still remember that. So it was funny, but also, you know, like that's also how all the guys, most of the guys were in the team, you know. We're all a little bit, you know, if you have something to celebrate, we're going to celebrate it.
The podium was probably the best part of the day. That, like, just to have all nine of us up there, there's some really close friendships in that group, and to see Sveino, who had been a part of so many teams' time trials, pull on the pink jersey. I mean, it didn't hit us until, even though we were confident we could get the results and everything, I think once we were on that podium, we just let go. It was like, woo, we've finally done this. We actually did it. All this build-up that we were going to win and we can win. And, I just think we had quite a young team as well. We had young guys in the team. I just remember that podium was so enthusiastic and just elation that we had won, and those champagne bottles, yeah, they're massive, and just the pink confetti falling on us and everything like that. It was just a dream come true, so that was pretty special.
Thinking back to that team we had, not just even in that Giro, but in Orica Green Edge that year, it was a family. And I think sitting in that tent, sitting like with your best mates, and you're making history in that moment. And if everything came together, if we were the fastest team, we were going to be the first winners of a stage in that Giro d'Italia and to wear the pink jersey for the next few days, because it was basically sprint stages. So there were so many things, I think, going through all of our minds in that one moment, which I don't think any of us really prepared for. We knew we had a good chance, but yeah, like I said before, everything has to come together on that one day. And I think, like we spoke about within the team before the race, that we were going to make sure that Sveino crossed the finish line first, it being his birthday and what he'd done for the team. I think also that came into that feeling when the last few teams were coming across the finish line. I think it was Quickstep that was closest to us. That feeling that Sveino was going to wear the pink jersey for me was probably the most exciting thing out of all of it. Like, he's committed so much to all of our success and helping even when there's not success, but he's just one of the most genuine guys out there. And I think for me, those years that we were together in the team, I was a young guy, very naive and not really knowing the world or even cycling in any sort of aspect, but he was always one that I could go and talk to if I had some sort of problem or I needed some advice, and he was always there. And to share that moment with that guy that was about to wear the pink jersey, yeah, I think you can see on his face the moment that we realized we won, he instantly hit him, you know, like he's like, wow, I'm going to wear the pink jersey. And I think between all us friends, like, we were obviously happy about the win, but for me, that was more than the win of the stage.
I think, you know, a lot of us have been part of different groups, organizations, and things throughout the years. But like on that, in that moment, I was with like my brothers, with like my best friends, and you don't get those moments like in life. And it's like, man, it's something that I'm reminded now that I'm removed from the sport, is like, those are some of the best moments. It's not about like, okay, yeah, to win the stage was great, but it was that moment with you guys and what we did through like through all the ups and downs and that build up to that time, and that it was just, whoa, what a feeling. Yeah. And it's something I always think about to this day. And it's not about, oh, how great we were and how we had the pink jersey and all this crap. It's that moment where we could truly be proud of one another, and like, you just don't get those moments a lot in life.
Yeah, we had a really tight team that year, and when you go to a race like that and with a really close group of friends and you're able to achieve what we did in that first stage, it's obviously going to be special. But there was other things like Sueno's birthday. He was in the pink jersey on his 37th or 38th birthday, and he was really respected person in our team, so we're all over the moon for him. And yeah, the team was in great spirits. But yeah, when we were on the podium, we were carrying on a bit, but it was good fun. Took over the podium with some champagne sprays, and I remember we were all taking selfies together before and after the podium. And then I remember we after the podium, we jumped back in the bus, and we still had those massive bottles of champers. What were they, about 6 liters, I think? And we'd only sprayed about half of them. So I remember everyone was on the bus, like all the staff, and they weren't in the cars, they were on the bus. We had like 30 people on the bus back to the hotel, and we were just sitting around playing music, dancing, drinking the rest of the champers.
day one of 3 weeks.
So it was good fun. But then I remember we got back to the hotel, and obviously dinner that night, wine all around. Can't complain with that. First day, first glass of wine for the Giro.
It all started to settle in when we sort of thought, wow, like we're all just as Whitey always says, a bunch of shipmen. But, you know, as a group, we're great. You know, like when no real individual is that good in our team, not to belittle us, but actually to bring us together. But together we can do great things. And I remember when we won, it was just sort of like, shit, actually, you know, we've won the team's time trial on the second biggest bike race in the world. And like, look at us, like, I grew up with Heppy and like Sueno, and I know Mitch and like all this sort of stuff, and we're just like normal blokes, and we're winning these massive race, and it was just like, holy shit, this is like incredible, you know? And I think the biggest thing I remember was the crowd. You've been to Tour de France and all these things, but that crowd was massive. Like Belfast really turned it on for the Giro. There was just like, it was like a rock concert, like you said. You walk down to this big platform, and it was just like massive amounts of people. I mean, we get the champagne. Sueno had the pink jersey, and we just let it rip, didn't we? We just let it rip. And for me, it was just like, I love cycling. Like, this is what it's going to be like. You know, this is like, I could crowd surf right now how good this is. I was like, they're all here to see me.
All right, well, let's talk about the day after, because I also think this was quite a significant day. It was a day riding in the pink. You know, Sueno never really got to show that pink jersey off because it was raining all day, and you and Heppy had to take on the brunt of the load that day. I always remember you guys were the first two guys to take on, and the feeling from there on for that first week was really about, we've got this, Green Edge, you've got this, don't you? You know, we don't need your help. We've got this. And we started it there with you guys on the first day. What do you remember about that first day in the pink?
Not getting much help from others.
This is Cam Meyer.
and going, oh, this could be a long 3 weeks riding already this solid on the front in Ireland. And I remember those roads. They're heavy roads. Conditions are cold. And I just remember swapping off with Heppy and just being like, yeah, this is already pretty grippy, and we got 20 days to go. It was just getting back to reality that like yesterday was so exciting and so dynamic, and now it's into the grind. Now it's kilometre after kilometre, hitting the wind on rough roads, trying to defend this pink jersey.
This is happy.
It was a big day, and I've got to say, after that day, I was a little bit nervous about the next 3 weeks. I knew, like, from the meeting beforehand that I was going to be riding the front. We had Michael there, didn't we? We're going for Michael in the sprint. Swaino was going to enjoy his day in the pink, or in the pink with a black rain jacket over. And, yeah, basically the early breakaway went, nice grab 5K of the race. Whitey said, all right, Heppy, you just go up the front, mate, and hold this group at whatever it was, 5 minutes. At that time, I was just by myself. Look, I was pretty excited as well, like riding on the front of the Giro in, my first go, and what had happened the day before. We were all pretty chuffed still. But I think I rode the first 80 or 90 kilometres just by myself and holding the breakaway there. And then about halfway through the stage, Cam came up as well. Whitey called Cam up to give a hand. That's where we turned back along the coast there. And there was one other guy from Kittle's team at the time. And so then there was three of us for the last 100K back into town. And yeah, it was just like a big day. I probably didn't really know what I was doing that well, but we just like basically rode ourselves into the ground to bring back the breakaway. And it really wasn't our responsibility to bring the final gap back for a sprint. You know, the sprint teams are going to come up and help towards the end. But I remember we'd gone inside 20 kilometres to go, and I could have just swung over. I'd already been on the front for 200K. It wasn't up to us, and all the other sprint teams had there, but we're up there as well, bringing back the last 40, 50 seconds or whatever it is. You know, when you've been up there all day, you're just like, nah, I'm staying here till we catch these guys. And just I'm swapping off like as hard as I can at this stage. I'm basically just absolutely killing myself to bring these guys back when it's not up to me at all. And then we caught him at like 7K to go or something. I swung over, rode in the last 7 kilometres, and that was that. But yeah, I remember that night, I was like, whoa, it's going to be a long
from here.
It's going to be a long few weeks, because then, yeah, Michael took the pink that day because he was right up there in the sprint, and I think we knew that we could have the jersey for a week or so, and because there was some more opportunities in that first week that we were targeting, so we all knew that it was going to be a big week to start with. And yeah, luckily the next day Whitey gave me the day off, and I think Swaino was on the front.
It was a bit of a come down after the day before.
This is Luke Durbridge.
We were in the bus. It was raining. We missed the sign on nearly, and they started, and we had to get in the cars, and we were like just behind. I remember, like, we missed the sign, and we're like, and they were like, can the pink jersey, Mother Rosa, please come to the front? And we were just like, boys, we gotta go. So we were like in the bus, just chilling out, sort of like still on the high from yesterday. And it was all of a sudden like, mate, there's 21 days to go. And we're like, oh, yep. Oh, shit. We better snap back into it. So we all jumped out of the bus, missed like late sign on. So we all signed on, and then we like got going, and it was raining. It was a really horrible day, and we had to ride, and it was just like, oh, right. Yeah. Okay. That was awesome yesterday, but we got a job to do here. And I think that was the first day we're like straight back into it. And then I remember Swaino coming up to me that day, and he was just like, I think I'm going to ride for a bit. And, you know, I'm like, Swaino, you can't, you're in the Maya Rosa, like, just settle down. But he wanted to ride. Like, yeah. he just wasn't like comfortable to sit back, and that was his job. That was what he was there to do. And that's why he's such a great team player, because he was always just like, right, I got my moment yesterday, but now let's crack on. I'm here to do a job. That's what made him such a great, great rider and a great person. But he was like, can we ride? I'm not today.
This is Matt White.
Yeah. So we're going into that race. I said before, even Santa Marita was the Italian champion, and he had a little bit of history riding GC, but we knew we weren't going in with someone who could podium the Giro. We weren't going to use him. We're going to obviously give him a safe passage through the first part of the race, but we really went in with a gung-ho attitude. It was like, well, we've got the jersey, and we're going to keep this thing as long as we can. And I remember the team was really up and about. Like I said, it was a pretty average day, same as the day before. Would have been lucky to be 10 degrees. Quite an undulating middle of the stage. And there was crowds everywhere. I remember, you know, seeing a pink painted cow and a pink painted sheep. And there was this crowds in the middle of nowhere. I don't know where they'd come from. And it was mind-boggling. It was horrible spectator conditions. And we took the roll by the scruff of our neck, and we said, right, we're going to do this. And I remember getting very little support. There was a small break up the road, maybe 3 to 5 riders, I can't remember. And basically, you guys took control. We made sure the brake, we didn't get too far out, pulled them back in ourselves. And I think maybe somewhere might have given us a little bit of help on the run in. And then I remember your role was to look after Bling in the final there. And that's when we changed hands of the jersey from Swaino to Bling.
This is Brett Lancaster.
Everyone's, you know, just dug deep because Swain has dug deep his whole career, especially in our team back then, you know, for others. So it was a special feeling to give that back to him. And you know, we went out that day and gave it everything. And definitely there were some crashes, wasn't there, Mitch, coming into the end there? Jeez. And I think with leading out, I had obviously a lot of experience before I worked with you, Mitch, and I was sort of showing you the ropes. And what we did decide that year, the year before, was I was always last man, but it was sort of more to show you where to be positioning, because I was obviously more experienced at it, and show you the ropes. And, you know, I was pretty cool and calm, and it just comes with experience. Yeah. And just I remember that sprint more clearly than actually the team time trial, because it's what I specialised in. So bringing it in there and dropping off in the sweet spot was pretty awesome. And then, yeah, Matthews didn't have the best sprint that day. Of course, Kittle was in his heyday and hard to beat, but he did a good sprint and we kept the pink, which was pretty awesome.
This is Bling.
Yeah, through the race, I think for the first sort of 3 quarters, I was just enjoying the feeling of us just being so dominant in the race. I can't remember exactly who was riding, but they were flying. Whoever it was making it so hard, even sitting on the wheel. But yeah, it's sort of mixed feelings, because I think we wanted to enjoy the Triple T win, but we couldn't really, because we were focusing on the stage. And like you said, there was some mixed sort of, yeah, what do we sort of focus on here? Do we enjoy it and sort of just, yeah, relax now? Or do we continue to keep fighting and go for the next stage win? And I think we took the approach of going for the next stage win and hopefully continue our winning streak. Unfortunately, I wasn't fast enough on that day. Kittle just, yeah, took the piss out of us basically. I think he won by a few bike lengths in that sprint. But yeah, I think we did amazing job through the race. We were, I think other teams showed us massive respect of what we did the day before. And then for me at the end of the day, I got to put the jersey on, which was nice, but I was a little bit disappointed that I couldn't at least be on par with Kittle. It felt like a little bit of a consolation prize putting the jersey on and taking it away from Swaino when I didn't earn it on that stage, you know? So I honestly would have liked to keep it with Swaino for a couple more days. But that's not the way the rules work. In that GC where you finish on the stage, it goes on the count back. So, yeah, I think I was the first one of us to finish, and that's why I got the jersey. But it was good. Obviously, I appreciated it from the team to still fight for me for a sprint. But, yeah, I think through the stage, from all the work that you guys did to support me, I was a little bit disappointed in myself, to be honest.
I didn't like it. I don't like... That's the one part of that whole thing I didn't like. It was actually quite fitting that it was pissing rain and 4 degrees, whatever it was, the following day. I think Scott was awesome. They had like a full-on pink bike and everything, but as with most of those things, kind of last-minute build-ups, the bike isn't quite right. So then you're back on your normal bike. The reality is we're just looking after Michael Matthews for the stage, because he's the one who's going to be able to bring it home for us and keep it in the team. So it was weird to have guys riding for me when the reality is what it is. I know the business. I didn't like the fact that everyone else was doing the work when that's something I love to do. I love to be in that mix. And so that was a strange day for me. Really, the team's time trial was everything. And then after that, it was back to my business, and I didn't like the fact where I wasn't part of the contribution, you know, to the team.
We had the jersey for a long time, some great stage wins with you, and also then we also had some bad stuff. We lost a lot of guys, some sickness, some crashes. There's heaps that happened in that race. What's the one memory, if you can pin it down to, that you think when someone says you 2:14 Giro, what was that for you?
Yeah, I guess For me, it's probably a little bit personal. Yeah, this probably sounds bad, but probably beating Cadell on that uphill finish in the pink jersey.
Not at all, mate. It was awesome.
Because like you say, a lot of things happened that stage where I think Bert crashed, Sueno crashed. I think the rest of us were okay from memory. But yeah, so it's like Durbo did an amazing job running into that final roundabout before the climb started. And yeah, I think we got through with maybe 15 guys and the rest got caught in the crash or crashed behind us. So it was, yeah, it's hard to say exactly. But for me, winning in the pink jersey on top of a hill, it was pretty incredible. But yeah, then you get across the finish line and you sort of get back to the bus after the podium and everything. And then you see your boys like all hurt and wounded. It's like, fuck. It's, yeah. Yeah, I like you say before, we were in that team, in that Giro, we were one team. And if one was hurting, we were all hurting. It was like, I've never meshed together with a group of guys like that in a team before ever, I don't think. So, yeah, it was sort of mixed feelings, I guess. But that's something that really stands out for me, I guess.
It was definitely stage six, mate. We had the jersey still with Michael and it finished on the famous Monte Cassino climb. About 25K to go, we come, as you remember, the shots on television was like a war zone, you know. It's just like someone had a bowling ball and taken out the field. So, you know, we're shooting down the right-hand side of the road and we're just, that part of Italy at that time of the year, the road's like ice skating ring, just everyone's just gone down and we're sliding 70K now. I'm straight into a wall. Broke my hand and that was it for me, you know. I was on the deck with Sueno. We're just looking at each other thinking, geez, we're in the first week and here we go. We got back on my bike. I knew my hand was broken. I could feel it, but finished the race anyway, as you do, you know, pretty silly. But me and Sueno ride in together and a bit of a chat and that was my Giro done, which was a shame because, you know, like we said, it was a great group and it was just a shame to leave. But, yeah, I wasn't happy to leave, but that's the way it was, mate.
The one stage that me and Matthews were the only eight guys that made it through that crash and Matthews went on to win that stage. That was just insane. And we're just like, what else can we do, you know? And then every day, you know, riding on the front together and we were just like, we were going so deep. I just remember how deep we were going and like over our level at that point in time, I feel. And then there was that day where the sickness started to hit our team. You know, we had Cam down. He was on his deathbed every day. It was incredible how he got through as many stages as he did. I remember one day I woke up and I got it. Matthews had always had a crash also and Heppy was feeling a bit under the weather. We started to sort of fall apart now, you know. We lost the pink jersey. Might have been stage 12 or something like that. Weaning Dog was in the break. So Whitey's, you know, telling us about the break and how good Weaning Dog's going and it's perfect and it's like, yeah, Weaning Dog's. And this is probably my hardest day. One of my hardest days ever on the bike. So first climb, there's three category one climbs to them. And I start to go out the arse first one. This is only my second Grand Tour and this has never happened to me. So I've never had a bad day in a Grand Tour. Now I know what to do in these situations, but I was seriously panicking because I'm starting to go back through the cars. And I'm like, oh, I don't know where it's going to go. And then we go to the point where we just like, I'm alone and we've got a Sunweb car and he's giving me some Cokes. And then I start to see Heppy come back. At least Heppy's with me. Heppy goes, I go past Heppy and Heppy's out the back. Next moment, there's Matthews. So the three last people on the road is Matthews, Hepburn, myself. And we all went through really bad patches. You know, we had to wait for Matthews one moment and Heppy, but then had to come to the bottom of the last climb and I was looking really bad. And Whitey's in the radio and I love Whitey's motivation. He was trying to like gee us up with what Weaning Dog was doing. But at this moment, I couldn't. Like all Whitey was saying was like a blur. And he was like, Weaning Dog's looking really good, boys. You know, he's going to win the stage, I feel. He's flying up there. And I'm on my deathbed right now. Like, I'm fucked. I couldn't care less what Weaning Dog's doing. I just need a Coke, you know. Anyway, and it would get to the point where we're on the bottom of the last climb and Heppy's like, Derbs, we got to go, mate. Honestly, mate, if we don't go now, we're going to be outside time cut. And I'm the fear in my face. Like, I'm going to get eliminated from we wear the pink jersey for 10 days and now I'm going to get eliminated on a mountain stage. And I'm bashing my head against the wall and I'm trying to get up there and Heppy's actually giving, he had a bottle and a cap and he's trying to give a bottle to the public to push me. So he's saying, can you push this guy? I'll give you a bottle. So they're pushing me, like on the up the hill. And I'm just like, I can barely pedal at this point. And he was like, nah, not long enough. And then he kept the bottle because he needed the next person to push me. And we're going, and this was like a 10% steep climb, you know, like really steep. And we, and each time Heppy's like taking his cap off and giving out, I reckon he would have given his jersey if he had to. Eventually we get to the flat piece and Matthew's like, righto, get on. And Heppy and Matthews had helped me all the way up the climb, and we had like 500 meters to go. It was like real fast, and Matthews just like ripped this turn as hard as he could with me on the wheel, and I'm just like sprinting for the line, like out of my saddle, like a team time trial more or less. Like, and there's this photo of me and Heppy about to finish, and like, man, I am just like white, like I'm laying down. I'm like, look like I'm dead, more or less. And Wise in the road, like, yeah, all right, boys, another stage. Ween Dog wins the stage. And I'm just like, this. And I was so bad. We made time cut by 30 seconds. All three of us, you know? And you imagine that, like, the whole team would lost three riders. Like, we'd already lost Cam. We'd already lost Lancaster. Three guys out in one 30 seconds. We're going into the rest day. And it was just like, you couldn't, it was the most bliss rest day ever because you were just like, I'm so bad.
We did what we had to do. Like, we went flat out from the start. We won our stages. And in the end, everybody was, yeah, for one sort of reason, only two guys finished, but it was a successful Giro for us. Let's say it started good and afterwards it was a little bit less, but in the end, I was still feeling proud, you know, about what we achieved. So yeah, maybe we did everything in the first 10 days, but yeah, what you have in the pocket, you have in the pocket. So yeah, no, I still was proud about what we achieved. And yeah.
Probably the biggest thing that sticks out in my mind was being sick. And day after day after day, I was in the absolute hurt locker. I ended up in hospital with a stomach infection eventually after three or four stages, getting on the bus, shivering in the back of the bus with blankets over me and just going, I love that we still had the pink jersey, but I actually wouldn't mind us losing it because I what I just keep having to get on the front at the start of these stages and I am not anywhere healthy at all and I'm in big trouble and I'm having to get on the front and try and protect this pink jersey and I do 30 or 40K and then spend the last 50, 60K out the back of the peloton just trying to get home. And I nearly wished we would just give the pink jersey. Like, we've had it for 6-7 days. Please, just I just want an easy day. I just want the rest day to come. And I didn't make it. And I ended up in hospital with a stomach infection. I just remember that how grueling it was through those days plugging away on the front whilst being sick.
The whole thing was so eventful from start to finish with the success we had in the first week. You know, we had the pink jersey, we were having a great time, we won a few stages, and then everything happened. We had crashes, we had guys getting sick, and through that middle week, like, everyone was just like dropping like flies in our team basically with this mystery bug that was just going around. Then we arrived, you know, at the end of the second week. We had, what do we have, four of us left. You were there, Santa, Sueno and I. And I remember when it got to that stage, it was really like, all right, we've lost enough guys now. We've really got to gel together as well as we can in these moments and really help each other through. And then for the last 4 or 5 days, it was just Sueno and I. And from there, it was really like, all right, we're only going to the finish together. Like, if one of us goes home, it's all over. And I remember at the time, even the team was sending staff up. There was only two riders, so you don't need the amount of staff that you do for nine riders, which was there. And Whitey even like semi-joked that he was going to send the bus home in the last few days. And we were like, and just keep the camper van. And we were like, mate, if you send the bus home, we're going home. Like, so we had, for that last week, we had one soigneur each, we had one mechanic each, we had one director each, one race car each. That was just really good fun because we were up in the mountains. Sueno and I were basically the last guys on the road every day. Nothing was expected of us. We'd had such great success in the first part and achieved all our goals and all the team's goals that we were basically just riding to the finish. So it was so relaxed. And because we only had two riders, the whole last week we just had so much time, because after the race we jump on the bus. You don't have to wait for nine guys to shower. It's just the two of you. Get back to the hotel. The mechanics don't have much work to do. They've only got two bikes to look at. The soigneurs are the same. They've only got one massage each. So we were just down at dinner every night at 7:30, 8 o'clock, eating with the staff and enjoying Italian wine.
The Gavia, you know, the organizer's telling us that, you know, the weather forecast is fine. You're in this valley looking up the mountain and you can just see it's dumping snow. Everyone's just starting. It's kind of neutralized by the riders, but that doesn't mean anything, you know. And sure enough, as soon as we get up to the point where it's snowing, some bloke tacks, and it's just mayhem. This day was one of the craziest bike races I've ever seen, because I know for myself, like, basically you're just riding in small groups at first to get over the climb. And then as you did the descent, like I did a full clothing change, guys were descending. And the guys that didn't do, like, the full clothing change, man, they were shaking apart on the bike like I've never seen. You know when you get those hypothermic where you're completely... So I was just riding past people like it was a triathlon and looking at the state of some of these guys. And you know when your eyes are just, like, glossed over and you're just doing those full body shakes? I'm just like, whoa, this is insane. And for me, that epitomizes the Giro, because... That kind of stuff, it just doesn't happen in baseball or football or these things that are very controlled environments. And I think that's, I hate to say it, but that's the beauty of our sport. And it's probably been always the appealing factor to it. And I, you know, as much as I want safety for everyone, I'd hate to see that change.
It was out of our control what was happening around us. But there was, like I said, there was guys going down like flies. But the one memory for me is, I suppose, the day that Michael won, I think it was stage 9 or to Monte Cassini. Now, it was a 240-kilometre road stage, and we'd had the jersey for maybe 8 stages already. And I remember calling Bluff with BMC because, you know, people, you know, you guys had been through the ringer controlling those previous 7 or 8 stages, and it was a 200K of relatively flat stage, and then it got undulating before a 7 to 9K climb, which finished where the finish was on the top. Remember the banter going in between the cars, because we had Jerry in the car and BMC were trying to force us to work. And I was like, well, we're losing the jersey today. And, you know, it's not our job. They had Cadell there, who was obviously one of the big favorites. And you guys didn't ride that day. And I remember the gap going, real big time. BMC had a real challenging ride. And we came into the bottom of that climb. And you remember it started to rain. And we are in the very deep southern Italy. We get into start to get into town under 5K from and it was looking pretty sketchy. Yeah, 5K from the bottom of the climb, we came into this roundabout, and there was one of the biggest mass pileups I've seen in my career. And we got out of the car, obviously car one, so we're right there in the action. And there's Sveno slid off to the right with Brett Lancaster. Can there's 3 guys on the deck. In pain on one side of the road, someone else on the left-hand side of the road. And, like, we got out of the car. It's this mad rush. Obviously, car two had to come up, and we sort of made sure everyone was semi-alright. I think Brett broke his arm. Swain was skinned, and Cam had a fair bit of skin off, and I can't remember who the other one was, but we had to go because, you know, we were 5K before the bottom of the climb. We called up the car two, Vittorio. He came up. We knew, obviously, the ambulance people were there and they were going to look after you guys. So we left that chaotic scene. Then we work out. We get back. The television's on. We look. We hit the bottom of the climb. Oh, gee. There's only 7 guys in the front. We've got 3. And it was Michael Matthews, Durbo, and Santa Marita. Anyway, up this climb. And obviously, when there's only 7 or 8 guys in the front group compared to, you know, there might have been 30 or 40 at the time, it was different. And so... A few GC guys had missed the split, and so BMC continued to. I can't remember who it was. I think off the top of my head, it might have been Daniel Oss was in the front there with Cadell, and he was driving it. And this climb, it wasn't steep. It might have had some pinches at 7 or 8, but a lot of it was 4-5%. And so this regular pace went on, and these 7 guys basically went up together. Maybe 1 or 2 got dropped near the top, and we had 3. And Durbo got dropped because Durbo was doing some efforts with riding with Daniel Oss. And then we got to the top, and, you know, Julian Dean was doing a Vark course, and he gave me the heads up that the finish line was on a corner, and definitely if you can stay to the left-hand side because it was a left-hand swinging corner. We gave that information to Bling. And, yeah, then Bling proceeded to go win again, and that was our second stage win of the race. But we hadn't done a metre of work that day, but we'd done about 1,500 kilometres before, and it was such a nice feeling. On one hand, it was such a nice feeling because, yeah, there's not too many times that someone wins in the pink jersey. And so he'd just beaten Cadell in the pink jersey to win our second stage. But then my immediate thoughts were, how the hell are the other guys? Now, what are we going to do now? And my last the last images of those guys was Brett Lancaster was holding his hand. Someone else was skinned on the left-hand side of the road. Sveino wasn't talking nor – and I could see he had skin off everywhere on one side. And I was like, oh. Yeah, then it's calling Vittorio. Which hospital are they at? at the same time, we're juggling the podium, anti-doping. We've got five guys that are still cooked because we'd ridden them so hard the 8 days before. Three guys were at hospital, and there was just so much going on. It was crazy.
Well, there we have it. 2014 Giro reflection, team's time trial, and a lot of good stories there. I tell you what, like I said, I bloody enjoyed that one. Sitting back and just recording that was great because I got to chat to all those guys about the good stories and a lot of memories there that I didn't even know about and two had forgotten about. I was just like, that's right, that did happen. I really did enjoy that. What did you think, Lionel?
It was fantastic, Mitch. I mean, setting yourself the target of speaking to as many of your teammates as possible. I know how much work goes into something like that. Even on lockdown when you can get everybody on the phone, that was, that's like riding a grand tour in itself, I think. And I mean, that Giro was, I mean, it was extremely hard right from the start. I mean, the Giro is hard anyway, isn't it? But what a fantastic opening 9-10 days that the team had, winning the team time trial in Belfast, Sven Tuff taking the pink jersey, crossing the line first there. And then the next day, Michael Matthews takes the pink jersey, but keeps it within the team. And then you've got the job of defending it through some really tough stages once the race got back to Italy. And then Mike Matthews goes and wins at Monte Cassino in the pink jersey. I mean, the team must have been on cloud nine at that point. And then Peter Wiening winning at Sestola, which is a tough old climb. Another stage win ticked off. And then, the team kind of, the rigour and the difficulty of those days, I mean, it did catch up with a lot of members of the team in the last week of the Giro. But what was your outstanding memory of that race, Mitch?
Well, you sort of hit the nail on the head there, defending the pink. And I always remember this one moment. I'd sort of been helping Michael Matthews. I was his last lead-out man. So I'd been a little bit protected, as Michael had been, as a sprinter. And I'd sort of missed all that early work we sort of talked about in Belfast and the following days. And there came a day where it wasn't going to be a sprint. And they went, well, Whitey said, Mitch, right, mate, your day's arrived. You got a truckload of work here, mate. And I was like, uh-oh, here we go. And in typical fashion of the last few days, we just sort of took the load on, and like 13, 14 guys went up the road. Way too many guys, and you want to control as one team. And yeah, I went up the front and I went, all right, here we go. And the idea was I was just going to chase it on my own. It was a blockhead wind. Swain Tuff was supposed to help me out. In the end, he started rolling turns with me. Next thing you know, we couldn't get it back. We couldn't even hold it. Cam Meyer, get in there, help him out. We're rolling turns of this blockhead wind. And I always remember this fact. I was pulling on the front, and every time I pulled on the front, I thought to myself, this is the last pull that I'm doing. I am out of here. I'm swinging out. This is my death pull. I'm out of here. And I'd swing out. I'd get back in the wheel. I'd have 2 minutes rest. And I'd go, all right, this is really the last pull. I am out of here. And I did that. I am not joking. I did that for like 200K every time, 400, 450 watts, just into this blockhead wind. And I talk about this with Sveino, and Cam, and we always reminisce. This is some of the hardest pulling we've done, and these are guys who pull on the front all the time. So I'm happy for to hear them say that, because I tell you what, it was a death sentence. And yes, I really do remember that. It just sticks in my head because we were just defending that jersey, that pink jersey. It had so much pride, and we had so much pride in that team. As Luke spoke about, when you're in the team's time trial, you knew if you didn't get to the finish, it didn't matter, because you were going to give 100% because you had this great group of guys around you. And this was the way we raced that race. We were just pulling on the front to the death. It didn't matter, because I was doing it for Michael. I was doing it for the pink. I was doing it for all my other teammates. And just hearing this story again really takes me back to just what it was like riding with those really good Aussie mates. So
lovely. Oh, I mean, what's that like when you do that work and eventually you do peel off and leave them to it and know that keep your fingers crossed that nothing else happens and that the jersey stays in the team. And then when you get back to the bus, obviously Michael Matthews, he's off at the podium and doing the press conference and all of that, but the rest of you are in the bus. It must be such a feeling of satisfaction to know that you've basically achieved what you set out to do in the morning.
It was quite a funny feeling, because what happened there was we came to the base of these climbs at the finish, and I always remember Whitey going in the radio, "All right, Cam, you just ride tempo on this climb and pull back a minute from the break, and Mitch and Swaino, you just have a bit of a rest up this climb." And I was thinking, how does that work? How does Cam take a minute out of the break and Mitch and Swain have a rest on a climb? Ultimately, I went to the last wheel of the peloton, never came back, stayed there as long as I could and got dropped. And we rode in a group Edo of Green Edge guys. I think Heppy was back there, Lancaster was back there, Swaino, and we just all groveled in. So once we got in and we saw that, this is on this particular day, but every day when we got in and we still had that pink jersey, we'd open a bottle of wine that night and we just really enjoy it. So it was exactly like you say, it was hard work, well earned, and well enjoyed too.
And lastly, just tell us how your Giro came to an end that year, 2014.
Well, I ended up getting down to the fourth last guy, and I got a little bit sick there. I don't know what was happening, but we went down to Bari in the south of Italy, and this flu went through the peloton. It was very bad weather down there. I remember Marcel Kittel got sick and a whole other bunch of riders got sick, and it slowly made its way through the peloton. I got a bit crook, and I always remember this story too, is that Swain and Heppy were on watch for me one day, and I was just having a hell of a day and I just had to stop. That was it. I stopped, and Swaino said to Heppy, "You seen Mitch?" He said, "No, I haven't seen him." And next thing I knew, I was out of the race. The day before the rest day, my idea was to try and get to that rest day and then go on. But as you just heard from Swaino, the day after the rest day was the Gavia Stelvio day, which was just no laughing matter. That day was the hardest day of the Giro. So I think I wasn't getting through that anyway. So it was a really hard moment to stop that race. But I was just empty. I was empty from 3 or 4 days of just being crook. And Ivan Santoramita pulled out a few days after me, and then ultimately left Swaino and Heppy to ride it in for Green Edge.
Well, Mitch, I'm glad that in an indirect way, our Giro gave you a reason and an excuse to catch up with all your ex-teammates. And I think that's the thing that we perhaps underestimate a little bit on the outside, is how these moments, these race victories, these days on the road, you know, they do band you together as a kind of a band of brothers who all went through the same thing. And I think that really came across in your interviews there. As a journalist, I think I'd better watch out, because you got some really good stories out of the guys there.
It was a lot of fun. Like I said, it was a bit of hard work, which was nice, sort of pushed the limits again on the podcast world. But I have to say a big thanks to Will Jones for this one, because he had a lot of content to bring back down for one episode. I'm sure he had a lot of fun listening to it all. But Will Jones, he's the mastermind behind this episode as well. And Lara behind the scenes, who's been doing some fantastic work for Life in the Peloton. So thanks a lot, guys. I do want to mention that the next episode, if everyone's out there, I really want to hear your feedback from this episode. If you liked it, if you didn't, I'm happy to hear whatever you think. Send it in. I'd love to hear what you think. And also send some questions in, because the next one we're doing is a mailbag. I'm going to get my director from EF Education First, Englishman Tom Southam, on board. It's going to be great. He's got a wealth of knowledge of cycling. Plus, we're going to talk a little bit about being a director. So send in some director questions. and director sportif questions and any other question you want, because he knows everything about history of cycling. Plus, I'll have a see if I have a go at answering some of those questions too. So, guys, until that next time, send in that feedback and enjoy listening to the upcoming episodes. Watch out for Talking Luft as well, because I've got Matt White on there. It's a pretty epic episode because he is from the Luft era. He raced with no helmet. He raced with caps. He trained with caps. He talks about Lance in there as well. It's a pretty good Talking Luft. So that's next week on my feed in Life in the Peloton. But until 2 weeks' time, send those questions in. And guys, I hope you like listening. I'm Mitch Stocker. You have been listening to Life in the Peloton. The producer of this episode was Will Jones. The music in this episode was composed by Pete Shelley. Thanks, mate.